Lynch Show, thanks to A1 Homes Christchurch. Discover the easy way for the home you want on Newstalk ZB.
It is Newstalk ZB with Chris Lynch. Welcome back to the program. So what is going on in New Zealand when it comes to our appalling rates of suicide? What is going wrong in Canterbury? Well, one man who's been advocating to open up the discussion about suicide, particularly youth suicide rates in this country, is Mike King, and he joins me now. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Christopher. How are you, brother?
Good, thank you, sir. Thanks so much for your time this morning. Yet more appalling statistics on suicide rates in this country. What was your reaction to the Chief Coroner's report released late last night?
Oh, no surprises there, and there'll be no more surprises again next year as the rates continue to rise. As the discussion becomes more frequent, the reporting is going to increase as well. That the tolerance level for suicide among coroners will get lower, so those rates are going to get higher for the next couple of years anyway.
Now, this is an interesting point. So do you believe the reason why the rates may be perceived to be going up is because the coroners are being more open about discussing it?
Well, so there's a threshold. There's a threshold that every coroner must meet when it comes to a self-inflicted death. And there are certain criteria that must be met. So if I take my own life and leave a note saying why I took my own life, but I have drugs or alcohol in my system, that is not counted as a suicide. That is counted as a self-inflicted death. There are also certain coroners around the country may rule that someone was too young to understand that death is final, so they'll rule death by misadventure. So there are, there are a lot of self-inflicted deaths that aren't counted in the figures.
Okay. How do we change this, Mike? Because on the face of it, it does appear to be getting worse. I know perhaps it's easy to say more money. Thank you very much for mental health agencies. In your view, is it as easy as that? Is that the answer?
No. The first thing that has to change, Chris, is societal attitudinal change. And the only way to get society to change its attitude towards vulnerable people is to keep putting it in their face and saying this is a real problem for New Zealand society. And when you're seeing it, see, the problem with the Stay Silent campaign, unless it was in your family, it didn't affect you and you were able to turn a blind eye to it. But the more we explain that this is a real issue, the more New Zealand is going to say, hang on a minute, this isn't right, this needs to change. Now, here's one of the facts that I've learned after speaking for 4 years in schools up and down the country, spoken to over 160,000 kids up and down the country on a daily basis. 40% of our kids in school will have a suicidal thought before they leave school, whether it's a one-off fleeting thought or whether it's a recurring thought that grinds them down on a daily basis. And guess what? That's just normal. It is normal for all human beings to think about mortality in times of stress, in times of trouble. It is normal. What's not normal is that we have started to put labels on thoughts. We're saying good thought, bad thought. You can have that thought, you can't have that thought. That's like saying to a three-year-old boy, thinking about lollies is bad, you can't think about lollies. As soon as you plant that seed, you are forcing people, when it does pop into your head, to say it, think about it over and over again. Three-year-old boy, I want a lolly, I want a lolly, I want a lolly, I want a lolly. Right. So, but we all also know that if you have, so that's a one-off thought. Mm-hmm. But if you have recurring thoughts of suicide, right, we all know if you're having a recurring thought of suicide, we as a society should reach out and help. And those young people and older people who are having those thoughts should also reach out for help. But here's where the problem starts. 80% of young people who have a suicidal thought never ask for help ever. Why? because they're worried about what other people will think, they're worried about what other people will say, and they're worried about what other people will do with that information. They're also worried about hurting their parents. You know, I've said to lots of kids, but your parents love you, and you've told me that, you know, I don't want to hurt them. You know, I shouldn't be feeling like this. My parents have sacrificed everything. Other kids are really embarrassed because, well, I don't know why I'm feeling like this. What do I say to the person? You know, I don't want to look stupid when I go in there. So 90% of kids out there who are having a suicidal thought fear the judgment of others. They're scared of us. Now, if 40% of our kids are having a suicidal thought, Chris, if 40% of them, every single listener on your radio station must have at some stage in their life been approached by a young person and been approached by a friend who may be in trouble, a relative, and said, hey, look, I'm having these thoughts. Can I talk to you about it? And the answer to that is 90% will say no. You know, so we've got to stop. We've got to stop looking to the government and asking them to fix this problem. We've got to stop looking at mental health services. We've got to stop looking at mental health groups and stop asking them to fix the problem. And we all need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, why aren't people coming to me? Why aren't people coming to me and saying, I'm having, what is it about me that is preventing this? Now, I have people coming to me all the time. On social media, via phone, text, email. They're coming to me all the time, and I'm no better than anybody else out there. The only difference between me and everybody else is I have made it public, so everyone knows. If you come to me with your suicidal thought, I will not judge you. I will not shame you. I will not make you feel worse. I won't try and fix you. I'm not qualified to fix you. All you will get from me is unconditional love and hope. And most importantly, if you want to go and talk to someone, my friend, I will come with you. I will walk into that counselor's office with you. I will sit there for the first 10, 20 minutes, however long you need to feel comfortable. And then I will sit outside and wait for you to come back. Come out. And when you come out, I won't ask you any dumb questions about what happened in there. I will make sure you're okay, and I will check in with you that the next time you want to come, I'm still available to come with you. And that's what we need to do. We really do need to throw love at this problem. We really do need to let vulnerable people know that we are there and we care. I remember when, well, have you got time for this?
Yeah, you sure?
So here's look, you know, mental health in New Zealand is the only form of health where the onus is on the person in crisis to get themselves to the help. If I run someone over with my car, people will come over, they'll put a blanket over them and make sure they're comfortable. Then the ambulance will come, they'll make them more comfortable, put them in the back. Then the nurses will come out and check what damage has been done and take them to the doctors. Then the doctors will fix them. Once the doctors have fixed them, you get put in a hospital room till you recover. Well, when you are deeply depressed, it is exactly as being run over by a car. You are debilitated. So, you know, the last thing I wanted to do when I was like that was to ring up a bad place without them telling that I was fine. In that moment, Chris, I wanted just one of my friends to come into that room, tell me that they love me, and tell me how much I meant to them. Because when you are down in the dumps, you think you are hopeless, you think you are helpless, and you have no way. Need to be reminded every now and then just how much and that we are valued and we are loved. And this is the one thing that is missing from our society right now, especially for our kids. You know, there's two things our kids want. They want to be loved. That's standard. Everyone knows that. But the second thing that they really want is they want to know that their thoughts and opinions are valued by the significant adults in their life, in their community. But it's not happening. Our kids.
Why is that not happening, do you think, Mike? Because you're right
busy,
about that.
Mate. We're busy. So my son comes home, as an example. My son comes home. He tells me about five things in his day. Four of them are fantastic. One of them is bad. What do I focus on? Mate, you've got to do better here. Jesus, can't you do this? Look, you've got to do this. You've got to do that. We've discussed this over and over again. Now, the message that I think I am giving to my son is, mate, I love you. You're an amazing kid, but we can do better. You can do better than this. You know that I believe in you and you can do better. The message my son is receiving is, no matter what I do, I'll never be good enough for you. You know, the constant judgment that we have of our kids, the constant little put-downs, which in isolation we can justify. You are a moron, mate. I asked you to bring me a screwdriver. You bought me a spanner. Get your brother down. Well, your brother's better than you at this. You know, you're good at other stuff, but your brother's, get your brother down here. So in isolation, we can justify these little put-downs. But think about this. 5 little put-downs a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for 15 years. That's a hell of an inner critic you're planting in your child's head. And think about this. How we speak to our children becomes their inner voice. So let's start focusing on the positive things that our kids are doing. Let's start focusing on the positive things that our mates are doing. Let's create a society where it's okay to have problems. Let's create a society where it's okay to be imperfect. Let's create a society where we don't have to tell people that there's help out there. People can just come out and talk normally about their problems and not feel alienated, isolated, and alone.
I completely agree with you. And I think one of the reasons, all these things that you've talked about this morning, one word that I think we picked up on our show earlier, and that is judgmental. Do you think that because we are a relatively small country by size and by population, we judge each other more harshly than we do perhaps in a big city because there's less of us, so we steer and that's the feeling I got when I travel overseas and come back to New Zealand. Although I love this country, I do feel like we are a very judgmental country.
Absolutely. It's called the deflection technique. When you see someone who is you and you don't like what you see, you judge. You know, you deflect away from yourself. It's a protection mechanism that we use. You know, we're constantly saying to our kids that, we're constantly using online media, social media as an excuse for the behavior of our kids. You know, our kids are spending too much time on this stuff. Our kids are doing this. And I say to those parents, look at your Facebook. Look at your Facebook page. Just look at it. It's full of judgment. It is full of quick remarks about different things. You know, kids don't learn by what we say. They learn by what they see. And what they are seeing is a judgmental generation. Now, the other thing about social media is our generation is always looking for something to excuse ourselves from the problem. So, you know, I hear all talks I go to, social media, cell phones, all of these things are the problem. Well, guess what? A kid with great self-esteem, a kid who feels valued by the significant adults in their lives. And when I say significant adults in their lives, I'm not just talking about parents. I'm talking about the entire community that they live in. If they feel valued and appreciated by those people, those kids will never be bullied on social media. They will block all of those people on social media. Unfortunately, there are only about 20% of our kid population who have that. The other 80% are not getting their self-esteem from their significant adults in their life. And guess where they're going to get it? They're getting their self-esteem from the approval of other people on social media. And that's great when you're being approved. But one negative comment blows away 100 positive comments every single day of the week. And I know this because I lived that life for 30 years. I was on stage, you know, loving the adoration of 2,000 people on some nights, but I would only be focused on the one person who was hating my performance. And unfortunately, we have lots of kids out there who are getting their self-esteem from the approval of other people because honestly, as a community, we're not doing our job and building their self-esteem at home. You know, we're applying resilience training now. That's ambulance at the bottom of the cliff.
Yeah.
You know, that's the PC word for, hey, kid, you're not hard enough. We're going to give you some tools to toughen you up. It's so wrong. If we replace resilience with self-esteem, you won't need the resilience at all.
I agree. When you start getting your self-esteem nourishment from online, it's always going to end in tears. We're out of time. Mike King, mental health advocate, great to have your insight in the program. Some lovely comments coming through, ironically, on Facebook. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Take care, brother. Bye-bye.